You're listening to SBS On The Money with Ricardo Gonçalves.
Coming up on the SBS On The Money podcast, full-time jobs fall, the US cuts official interest rates, and where to now for chocolate prices. All that and more next. Everyone, welcome to the SBS On The Money podcast for this Thursday, the 18th of September 2025. It's a day where the Australian share market fell, the S&P ASX 200 down by 0.8%. We'll have the details with Lachlan Halloway from Morningstar in a few moments. But first to Australia's unemployment rate, which remained at 4.2% in August, but 41,000 full-time positions were lost, outweighing a 35,000 increase in part-time jobs. So what does it say about the economy and the direction for interest rates? For that and more, I spoke with Blair Chapman, an economist at SEEK. So Blair, the unemployment rate is steady, but jobs created fell. How would you describe the jobs market at the moment?
I think it's very interesting at the moment. I would say the jobs market is slowing as we'd expect. It's not necessarily showing up in the unemployment rate, but employment growth is definitely slowing, has been for some time. And it is very much what most people have been expecting. Today's data probably on the margin a bit weaker than most people would have thought going into it.
So what do you think this means for the RBA and future interest rate cuts? Does it increase the chance, when and why?
I think today's data definitely on the margin increases the chance of a cut. The RBA is only expecting the unemployment rate to increase marginally at a very slow pace over the next couple of years. While they were expecting the employment growth to slow to 1.6% year ended by the December quarter, we're already there now with only 1.5% year ended growth in terms of employment.
So how does this data reflect what you're seeing with the SEEK employment report?
It's interesting. We've seen, you know, job ads had been falling year on year for quite some time coming out of the COVID jobs boom. Right now, we're seeing it pretty much plateau. We aren't seeing too much growth in ads. You know, we are seeing some growth across the country, but not much. And that's what we'd expect in a sort of slow or slower growth employment environment.
And where is there the most demand for workers then?
It's really interesting that South Australia, you know, they had a bit of a slump a couple of years ago, and they really, in terms of employment growth and job ads, employment growth there, you know, over 3%, and then job ads are still really elevated. So plenty of demand for workers in South Australia at the moment.
It's Blair Chapman there from SEEK. Now, before we get the share market reaction, a quick story about the future for chocolate prices, because chocolate lovers may have noticed just how expensive it is at the moment, but prices for its key ingredient, cocoa, is easing. Analysts at Rabobank say weather issues, crop disease and underinvestment have affected global supply in recent years, leading to higher prices, but the worst may be over. For more, Stephanie Youssef spoke with agribiz analyst from Rabobank, Paul Joles.
So we've seen a pretty aggressive run-up in chocolate prices over the past few years. A lot of this is to do with the fact that we've had these really high cocoa commodity prices. So this has happened over the past year and a half. We saw crazy prices, about three times higher than they typically would be on the cocoa side. And that's now beginning to translate into chocolate prices as well. What we're seeing at the moment is, if we look at Dutch retail chocolate prices, we can see that from September 2021 levels, they're about 50% higher as of today. Likely, we're also seeing similar effects here in Australia as well.
So cocoa futures are expected to fall. By how much, and what does that mean for consumers?
Yeah, so cocoa prices, they're expected to fall over the next year and a half. They're still at very, very elevated levels, even though they have come off their highs. Our expectations is, even though they will decline, they won't go back down to the historical average levels. So they'll still remain fairly inflated. Because of that, it means chocolate prices will probably also remain fairly inflated for some time as well.
What are some of the structural issues still affecting cocoa producers and businesses?
Yeah, so we're seeing quite a few structural issues within the cocoa industry. So what you see with cocoa is 70% of the world's production takes place in West Africa. So that's Ghana and Ivory Coast predominantly. And what we've seen there is weather issues. We've seen crop disease. We've seen farmers exiting out of cocoa. All of these different factors, they've led to a big, big reduction in supply. So this is having a big impact along the supply chain. We are seeing more plantings take place now around the world for cocoa, but it takes a while for those flowers to be fully developing. So it'll probably take a bit of time before we see that increase in the production side. So it's a very, very slow process in terms of getting that production tap turned back on.
Now, shrinkflation has become a buzzword in recent years as we see chocolate sizes get smaller without smaller price tags. Do you think falling cocoa prices will see an end to shrinkflation, or is that something that's here to stay?
I think potentially it could stick around. You look at chocolate companies, they've really only got a few strategies for how they can deal with these higher cocoa prices. They can either reduce the size of the product, they can increase the price, or they can change the recipe to some degree, all in this in attempt to lower the cocoa content. Now, the thing is, because we've been in such a high-priced environment for about a year and a half now, these chocolate companies have had to absorb these costs for quite a while. So probably it'll still remain that you'll see that shrinkflation come into play just because these chocolate companies have been exposed to these higher prices for such a long time now. So it won't necessarily be a case of we'll immediately start to see bigger sizes of chocolate immediately because prices are easing.
What's next for the industry?
So there's a few different things that could take place. There's talk about using creating chocolate that has a lower cocoa content or alternatives to cocoa. My view here is that market is still very, very small. The market is very much still reliant on cocoa supply chains. So really what's next is trying to get past this crisis in order and make sense of the production around the world in order to have enough supply for the world and for the cocoa industry going forward. I think it will happen, but it's going to take quite a bit of time to iron out.
That's Stephanie Yusuf there speaking with Paul Jules from Rabobank. Now to the Australian share market, which fell. The S&P ASX 200 off 0.8% to 8,745. 9 of 11 sectors ended lower, the worst performer by far. Energy, the energy sector down 5.8%, followed by industrials and utilities, information technology and property, the only two sectors to do well. Of the best and worst performing stocks, best stock included Nuix up by around about 9.5%, Catalyst Metals up by 7%, and Boss Energy, the uranium producer, up by 5%. Worst stocks include Austal down by about 4%, Woodside Energy 6% weaker, but the biggest loser today was Santos, losing about 12% today. For more on the day's market action, I spoke with Lachlan Halloway, a senior equity analyst at Morningstar. Lachlan, let's start with the muted reaction on global markets to the US Fed decision to cut interest rates there for the very first time this year and those forecasts of potentially more to come.
Yeah, that's right. So you point out that the market's response was fairly muted, and that really reflects the extent to which this meeting and the result of this meeting was already priced in. You know, since the labour market started to show stronger signs of deterioration back in August, the market really revised up the likelihood of a cut at this meeting. 25 basis points was pretty much fully priced. There was an outside chance of a larger cut, but this was really what the market had expected, and the Fed did deliver it. And almost unanimously, there was one dissenting vote on the FOMC. That was the White House's appointment, but that wasn't really much of a surprise. So generally speaking, the announcement on the day, a cut as expected, so that's not going to really upset markets. The outlook, look, next year, you know, pricing in one cut, according to the Fed's dot plot projections, probably a little more hawkish than I think the market was expecting, and certainly fewer cuts than the market has priced in, according to interest rate futures. But look, there's plenty of water to pass under the bridge between now and next year. The way that the labour market evolves, the way the tariffs evolve, weigh on inflation in the economy is still yet to be seen. So I think there's a bit of uncertainty floating around for next year. Right now, though, things are broadly progressing as the market and the Fed sees it.
What about Australian interest rates? Job numbers came in a little bit weaker than expected today. Is the market still positioning itself for more rate cuts here?
It is. So the market has basically one more cut priced in by the end of the year and maybe another one next year, although it seems to be a little bit of a debate around that. You know, there has been a string of somewhat stronger data, both on the inflation front and also on the growth front in the last few months, notwithstanding a weaker print on the labour force today. It wasn't by any means a calamity, but it was a touch weaker than the market had probably expected, though the unemployment rate held fairly flat at very low levels historically, we should point out. So the economy is not deteriorating quickly, but we are going through a process where the private sector, which has been a little bit weaker, of course, because of the rate cuts and slower growth, starting to take its place again as a driver of economic growth and of jobs growth away from the government sector, which has really driven both of those things in the last couple of years. As that handover takes place, we are seeing a little bit of softness as the project starts to get kickstarted again. So that's sort of, it's a little bit muted now, but the economy does seem to be broadly recovering. And so that's why the market has scaled back its anticipation of further cuts, still cuts to come, it would seem, but perhaps not as many as we might have thought a few months ago.
Our corporate story of the day appears to be Santos shares tumbling around about 12% at one stage today. That's after Abu Dhabi National Oil Co. walked away from its $36 billion takeover offer for the company. What do you make of it and its significance? Because Santos has been a bit of a takeover target for some time, hasn't it?
It has. It's actually a bit of a coincidence. I think last time we spoke back in June, they just announced the bid, XRG Consortium, and now here we are today and they've pulled it. Look, the reaction from the share market is not really all that surprising. It's just the unwinding of the takeover premium that XRG was offering for Santos. The bid's gone, so the takeover premium falls away. I mean, I'd reiterate, as we did back in June, that we still think that that bid undervalued Santos. You know, we saw that business at prices about $10 a share at its fair value. This bid, while it was above the share price before the offer was made, it still looks like it undervalues the business to us. So we don't think this is necessarily all that bad news for shareholders. We didn't think they were getting a great deal out of the deal, and now it's going to stay on the public markets and in public hands and in Australian hands, which I think is a good thing in terms of energy security and the broader health of our public markets. Yeah, look, there've been a few deals that have fallen over for Santos, and today, reading between the lines, it might have had something to do with the likelihood that it would face potential regulatory challenges from the Foreign Investment Review Board and who would bear the risk going through that process. We don't read too much into it and have any concerns about the underlying assets that Santos owns. It still has a lot of quality assets, and we think the market is undervaluing it here. It's a shame, I suppose, short term for shareholders to suffer the drawdowns of premium unwinds. But if you think back, to say to Origin's takeover from Brookfield, that was also knocked back. That time it was by shareholders, not by the bidder. But shares are well above where they were when that offer was made a few years ago. It may be the case that in the not too distant future, hopefully investors realise the value of Santos as a business.
And so finally, what are you telling your clients right now, and where do you see the opportunities for investors?
Yeah, I mean, looking more broadly to a global story, I've seen in the last few weeks, more calls and more questions about whether or not there's an AI bubble. I mean, it's been with us really for years now. Is AI just hype? How much of it's real? Our response recently, at Morningstar is that we don't think we're in bubble territory. A lot of the gains, there's a lot of investment, a lot of share price growth, yes, but it's being matched. We're seeing monetizable use cases of AI. That's really positive. Most of the Magnificent Seven to us look fairly valued. Microsoft actually a little bit undervalued, which is an opportunity there. But, generally speaking, we're not seeing bubble territory for the AI stocks. I suppose what's a little bit more, perhaps worrisome is that we are seeing a lot of big, large cap blue chips domestically, whose share prices have run really hard without an obvious catalyst, like market darling CBA, Wesfarmers, Coles. They're almost trading on Mag 7 like earnings multiples without really an obvious story there. So we have some questions about valuations at the larger end of our market. It is starting to look quite stretched, but in the broader global story, questions about this AI bubble, we don't see it like that at the moment.
That's Lachlan Halloway there from Morningstar, and he wraps up the podcast for this Thursday. Don't forget, if you enjoy it, to give it a rating or a review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, and to click subscribe.
This SBS on the Money podcast is provided for informational purposes only and should not be understood as constituting advice or a recommendation. It is not personal advice and it does not consider your personal circumstances or objectives. You should contact a licensed professional before making any financial decision.
This SBS On The Money podcast is provided for informational purposes only. The content on this podcast should not be understood as constituting advice or a recommendation. It is not personal advice and does not consider your personal circumstances or objectives. You should contact a licensed professional before making any financial decision.